You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
I am the terror that flaps in the night. I am the bug that splatters across the windshield of crime. I am Darkwing Duck, and I'm listening to the Canned Air Podcast. How about you?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
And joining us this week to talk about his comics Supermom and Delta Dawn, we welcome comic creator Scott Bachman. Scott, thanks so much for being here with us today.
You're very welcome.
Got a good show lined up for you. I say that every week, but I mean it every week. And this week's no different. In our retro roundtable, you know, I saw something on the internet that kind of inspired this. I just can't remember what it was. It was something this month in pop culture history happened with Pixar. I can't remember what it is, but I know Toy Story 4 is coming out, so that's good enough reason to be talking about these movies, I think.
Can't believe they're doing another one.
I know. We'll get on. We'll talk about that. Well, I've got mixed feelings, but then in the comic vault, gentlemen, what are we talking about today?
All-Star Superman number 1 Special Edition.
Wow, every word in that was fantastic. All-Star Superman Special Edition. Sorry, Randy.
Continue. Oh, my bad. I've got a Doctor Who comic.
Ooh, cool. Doctor Who. Yep. I don't know much about Doctor Who.
I'll try and fill you in.
Cool. A few of the things we'll be talking about there, and then we're going to turn our full attention over to Scott and talk more about Supermom and Delta Dawn. But before we do all that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. If you like what we're doing here and want to show some love to your boys, go over to patreon.com/CannedAirPod and become a patron. Become a founder, as we call you. For $5 a month, you get access to our Canned Air Patreon pod, the show you can only get there. And we're going to talking about putting some more interesting things up there. I don't know what said things are yet, but we'll figure that out, won't we?
We'll make it interesting.
Right. And if you're going to a Wizard World Con in the near future, use promo code CANNEDAIR at checkout. Get a cool 10% off your ticket prices. And if you've attended a con before, you know that every little bit helps.
Yeah, so every little bit.
Do not forget that. CANNEDAIR promo code at checkout. Anything else, gentlemen?
Yeah, we just finished up Korg's Con here. If you're in the area, we're going to be at Torgs, another video game convention here, July 6th in Newark. If you guys are listening to us on Facebook or Apple Podcasts, leave us some reviews, some comments, let us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and we'll read them on the air.
There you have it. And with that, let's kick off this week's Retro Roundtable.
Engage. I'll be back. Shut up!
All right, guys. Shut Pixar up. And 3D animated films. Where should we start?
About the beginning.
Toy Story?
Yeah, I was so hoping that was the right one.
Well, I mean, there were little shorts that came before Toy Story. I mean, there was one called, I think, Tin Soldier, where.
Have you seen that? Do you have that DVD? I've got it. It's got like six small shorts, like early animation.
I think it's a special feature on one of the Toy Story DVDs I own.
I think it is too, yeah.
But like the original concepts and reel was Woody as like this big menacing cowboy doll after the little tiny space ranger guy, you know? But it's interesting to see how things take form like that. But I was definitely the kid who was hiding down the hallway, sneaking up to his bedroom door to peek in and catch his toys doing something. So many times I did that when I was real young. And even last week, no, not really. But when that movie... gotcha! But when that movie came out, man, it struck a chord with me, obviously. Look behind me. There's toys all over the freaking wall. Of course it did. But
I was a mix between both the kids, Sid next door and Andy.
Yeah, you never fail to tell me how much of a Sid you were. Especially when you're looking at my nicer toys. Like, you know, I'm kind of a Sid. Like, get the hell away from it.
Setting up the G.I. Joes in tactical positions in the backyard and getting the BB gun out.
Burning them with a magnifying glass.
Nah, I never did that. I used to blow up army men with firecrackers, I guess. I did do that. So, but not G.I. Joes.
I put a firecracker in Michelangelo's hand and lit it. And about blew my thumb off.
And it would have served you right for doing such a...
Oh, it did serve me right for trying to do that.
Such a horrible thing.
Those wicks were quick as shit, man.
What was it, like an M80?
Nah, I don't know, probably just a Black Cat. But they're, yeah, the wicks
I had one of those things go off in my hand once, and like I swore it blew my fingers off my hand. But I didn't look at my hand. I just put it straight in my shirt, wrapped it up, and like started screaming when I looked at it. I was like... Oh, my hand's still there. Okay.
My thumb was the size of my head, it felt like.
I just couldn't feel my hand for a few hours after that happened. But anyway, Scott, how about you? Any Pixar films or just any 3D animated films that come to mind, sir?
Well, I want to jump in on the destroying toys because...
Please do.
I had a history of doing that quite a bit. My friend across the street had this giant dirt mound in the back of his yard. Now, mind you, this is rich suburb, Strongsville, Cleveland area. You don't have big piles of dirt in your backyard.
Not usually.
No.
This thing. Well, he also had a couple cars up on bricks that we used to play Dukes of Hazzard, where we'd leap between the cars because they weren't moving, but we could do that.
Oh, wow. Man, that would have been fun.
We decided to recreate a few movies. So at one point in time, we took this giant, it wasn't a Barbie van, but it was some big metal van. You know, when they used to make toys out of things that mattered,
right? Yeah.
You couldn't destroy them. And we filled it up with gasoline.
Oh, holy shit.
You made a rolling pipe bomb, huh?
We made a rolling pipe bomb because, you know, if we're kids, we just think it's going to go on fire as it's rolling down the dirt mound. And Vince, whose house it was, decided a firecracker was the perfect way to light it because you don't want to get close to the gas because it smells bad, right? Oh, God. So he lights his firecracker and he throws it at the gas. The first one doesn't go off. It just, I don't know if it bounced off. I can't remember what. But he did it with the second one and the gas didn't go boom, but it did
more
go
of a whoosh.
Kind of fireball slowly. It didn't go anywhere. It's just a big fireball. And what does he do? He's mad at it, so he kicks it. And the gas goes everywhere. And then he starts running around the house with his pants on fire.
Oh, my God.
Meanwhile, there's a giant inferno mound of dirt in the background, huh?
Yeah, and his grandfather comes out yelling at him. His grandson's on fire, running around the yard, and all he can do is yell at him.
Jeez, what a sight to see.
Oh, man.
So we were a little brutal to our toys.
But wow.
I'm never going to forget that one.
Yeah, I would say not. Yeah, that's awesome. That dwarfs any story I freaking had. And it just made me think. I saw in the news like 2 or 3 days ago, a guy on the White House lawn set himself on fire. Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
Did he die?
Yep.
Holy cow. Like, how could... Oh, like accidental is one thing. I get it. You're having fun playing with gasoline and shit goes wrong. But, you know, to intentionally put yourself on fire. Damn.
I hope he made his point. I mean,
yeah, whatever it was. But Jack, what about you?
You guys seen Ratatouille?
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen that one. I don't know anything about that. I know it's
why'd you bring it up?
Because it's on this list of movies here. Was it good?
I thought it was good. It was definitely not. Was that a Disney Pixar?
Mm-hmm.
Is it? Yeah. Okay.
No, it was a regular Pixar.
Was it?
Oh, yeah, it wasn't like Disney. Okay. It was just a Pixar.
It was good. I thought it was good. And it was like the mouse or the rat, whatever he was, wanted to be a chef. And so he would sit on, you know, then this actual guy who wanted to be a chef couldn't cook worth a shit. So they teamed up. The mouse would hide under his hat and like pull his hair. And he would kind of puppet him into...
What?
Yeah.
No idea about that.
So,
no idea.
And I don't know if you remember, there was a book that came out, a Star Wars book that's canon, mind you. I think it was called The Legend of Luke Skywalker I had read.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
And they made a thing where Salacious Crumb had a mite-sized, like a flea-sized being that lived... Yeah. On him that was aware and could talk and like had been talking to Leia while she was, you know, Jabba's slave, but then jumped on Luke's head and pulled his hair and made him beat the Rancor in that pit.
That's
it. It wasn't the Force. It was Laos. Canon. Thank you, Disney.
Wow.
That is a very appropriate reaction, Scott. Thank you.
Nah, that's just wow.
Yeah. Randy, what do you got?
I know you guys have seen the Lego movies, but did you guys see Lego Batman?
No.
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, you're missing out. It was hilarious.
I think I saw part of it on television or on streaming or something. I saw part of it somewhere. And though I enjoy that Batman, I think it worked better in the Lego movie for me personally because it was small increments.
Fair enough.
It being the whole movie might have been a bit much for me personally, but
fair enough.
From what I've seen, Robin's hilarious.
Yeah, there's parts in it.
I'm sure they're all hilarious. I'm sure it's a good movie. Yeah, I'd like to see it from front to back.
I haven't even seen the second Lego movie yet.
Oh, it's out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Really? I thought we were still waiting on it. It's coming on.
That's on. I know it's on Vudu. Yeah.
What? Really?
It's been on Vudu for a while.
It came out in the spring.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Jeremy needs to come out from under his rock, I guess. Wow.
Well, I'm a little tuned into those more because of my kids, but, you know.
No, I get it. I get it.
Well, here's the thing about Toy Story, and you talked about kids just kicked it off. Up until Toy Story, nobody respected cartoons. They were only for kids.
That's true.
Yeah.
And the weirdest thing was, this movie about toys, all of a sudden, everybody now respected animation, and you could make serious films. That movie changed everything.
It really did.
I think it's part of the realism, because like when that movie came out, a buddy of mine had just had a baby, and some of the toys on the ground were like, hey, that's right there on the floor.
Yeah. I remember when it came out, you know, I was in high school. I was fading out of like the Disney movies because, you know, in my junior high years or elementary years coming up, it was Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, and all those big ones were coming out. And, you know, by high school, obviously, I wasn't watching them, so I didn't watch Toy Story. And I remember a few years later, my sister had it on VHS, and I was bored, and I was like, well, I want to watch this, and it blew my freaking mind. I watched it so many times, and have been such a big fan ever since. I was one of the people sobbing, and not sobbing, but I was crying in the theater for the third one. That was, God, that was heart-wrenching.
I don't get it.
You don't get it?
Not that crying part.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a heartless bastard or something. But
you were blowing shit up in your backyard.
I know, that's probably
I mean, most of the Pixar movies, like, you tear up at. You can't help. Unless you don't have a soul like some people.
It was only the third one. It was the third one. Him, like, letting go of him.
Yeah.
You know, after all those years, after all they've been through, you know. And I guess that strikes me not even on a relationship like I have with a toy. It's just a relationship with anyone or anything you've ever had to say goodbye to. You know, it kind of really strikes that chord.
That's fair.
But
I've never seen it all the way through, like in one whole thing. I've seen bits. I've seen the whole movie, but not all the way through pretty yet. Pretty
That's
much.
Why you that haven't taken why, the journey, Jack. Now he's tearing up.
Okay. You guys are reaming me over here.
What's the name of the guy that voices the pig in Toy Story?
Oh, John Ratzenberger.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the only person that's been in every Pixar film.
Yep.
He's like their good luck charm.
They really? Is that every accurate? Movie. I didn't know that.
I was just trying to look it up to see if there's a movie he wasn't in, but for the longest time, he was in every single Pixar movie.
So he was the pig. He was the flea in Bug's Life, the tractor trailer in Cars.
I've never seen
that's right.
Cars.
He was the trailer that carried Lightning McQueen.
See, that was one I could never get into, was Cars.
Was he in the Finding Dory? I'm sure he probably was, but I can't remember who he was in Finding Nemo and Finding Dory.
Was he the Ray? That was like the school bus?
Yeah.
He was. Yep.
Who else were we missing, Scott?
I don't know. I was just trying to think of some of the crazy lore I've heard over the years.
You're cool, man.
I was just watching.
Every single one of the movies, they sneak in the number of, it's like A113.
Yeah. Wasn't that their like original design studio address or something?
It was a school that all animation people that have ever gone through California have gone through. Oh, so everyone's taken that class.
Gotcha.
And so it shows up everywhere in every one of the Pixar movies. And
I'll have to keep an eye out for that. I didn't know that.
I just don't pay that much attention to movies sometimes to catch that little stuff in there.
You're not paying that much attention to us. Cool. You're looking at your phone.
No, I'm not. It's just on.
I'm just giving you shit. Have you heard the theory about how all Pixar movies are connected and they're all one universe?
I've seen a video about that.
That would be so awesome.
I have heard that. Don't they also? They also have a record of like putting like a Easter egg of their next movie in the previous movie, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really?
There's YouTube
videos. And the pizza truck is in every movie.
That I was aware of. The Yo truck, the Toyota truck that has the Yo on the back. Oh, yeah. Pizza Planet truck. Yeah. those are such good films. Finding Nemo, another solid film. Dory was good, but not as good as the first one.
No, yeah, it was good, but nowhere near.
Yeah, Toy Story just seemed to hold its integrity through its sequels, at least in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I never thought like each one was just as good, if not a little bit better. What's that?
I loved WALL-E.
WALL-E is good.
What a solid pick.
Made humans look amazing in it.
Hey, it's where we're heading, buddy.
I know.
It's like the first 15 minutes with no talking?
Yeah.
And it's just a robot and a cockroach in a garbage pit.
Man, I forgot all about that film. I've only seen it once. I need to watch that again. I always forget about WALL-E.
Do you know about this, Randy? Because on this list of Pixar movies, there's one that's called Bernie. Is that a short that they did or something?
Yeah, because that's one of the characters from WALL-E.
Okay.
What is it? Let me see.
Burn.
Oh yeah, that's the little guy that kept erasing the treads.
That's
right.
I know.
Kept cleaning up after everybody.
That's one thing I love with all the Pixar's the shorts they have, like the birds.
Mm-hmm.
The one with the little bunch of little birds and the big old whatever he was, big dumb doofy bird that would try to hang out with him.
I don't recall that.
Kept flinging him off the telephone line because he was so big.
Remember the lamp and the ball?
Yeah, that was. I think that was their first short, wasn't it?
Probably. And, you know, I think Toy Story was a great...
That's for the birds. That's the one.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I think Toy Story was a great place to start for Pixar because, you know, although the technology was new and state-of-the-art, you know, compared to what we're seeing now, it was really young. And to be animating, you know, just toys that have these smooth surfaces and you don't have to put a lot of, I don't know, you didn't see a lot of Andy's face or his mother, you know, they were just kind of quick glimpses. And as those movies went on and the animation gets better, you start to see them more. But in that first film, I just think it was a great move to just have your focal point be on these things that would be super easy to animate with, you know, the technology the way it was.
That's what's got better between the Toy Story movies is like the details in the background and then the people.
Yeah.
Other than that, the toys look almost exactly the same.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But they also specifically built up different technologies for each movie, and they were planning long term to be able to mature their own technology because they built all of their own stuff.
Right.
So they invented the fur technology for Monsters, Inc.
Oh, that's
they
right.
invented for Sully. Water reflection and Bugs Life. And they kept building and building and building. It took a long time before they did a people-only film.
That would be, what, Up?
I don't know if Up was the first, but Up was one of the rare ones.
You know, that film, and I'm not saying anything nobody else hasn't said a million times already, but Up. You know, I've seen it, and I...
Squirrel?
What's that?
Squirrel?
Oh, yeah, the dog, right?
Maybe we should make Jack wear the cone of shame.
Oh, geez.
I just remember bits and pieces of it, but the opening. I mean, the heart-wrenching opening.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that when I first saw it, because it was I didn't watch it until it came out on DVD, and that first couple minutes, I was just like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
These aren't your mama's cartoons, Jack.
Seriously. What the hell? I didn't want to be depressed. I wanted to watch a good, heart-warming Disney movie.
It is one. It is. Yeah. You just have to have your heart ripped out before it gets warmed up.
Yeah, they got to tear you down and build you back up for the end.
Well put, yes.
In my days, we just had cross-dressing rabbits.
Yeah, really. And how I miss the cross-dressing rabbits.
Seriously.
You know, you just don't get it anymore. Somebody put on, you know how on Cartoon Network, like back in the day, like they had a quick promo that would show like a movie theater seating area that had all their characters like sitting there talking, waiting for a movie to start.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think they still do that to this day with some of their characters, more modernized. But they compared the two the other day on like iFunny or something, something I was looking at. And it's crazy to see the integrity. I mean, maybe these shows that are on now are good, but like the characters were cut in half, if not more so, but like Johnny Bravo, Samurai Jack, the Powerpuff Girls,
Dexter,
and Looney Tunes. You know, that's where Looney Tunes resided. You could still get a healthy dose of it during the day, I think, if you know, set your DVR. I missed that show so much.
They've tried to redo the Looney Tunes, and it's...
No, it's, they tried to ruin it, and they did a good job.
Yeah.
Tried to make it piece. Don't mess with the classic, man. Mm-hmm. Come on, you know. I bought the DVDs. I think I told you this before. They had a DVD collections come out, and I was all about it. And I bought the Volume 1 Looney Tunes, and I bring it home and I throw a disc in. And what they've done is, instead of, you know, how when you would watch, you know, Bugs and Daffy or whatever, it was, you never knew what you were going to get. It could be a Marvin Martian, Bugs Bunny, Yosemite Sam, Wile E. Coyote. Who knew? This whole first disc was nothing but Sylvester and Tweety, like back to back. And I thought, why wouldn't you just kind of mix them up?
But, yeah.
And it was because it was mixed like that, I didn't want to watch it, you know? It was weird.
I like the variety.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be like getting a whole bunch of Coyote and Roadrunner. I could only watch so much Roadrunner.
Right.
And they're funny, but like some of the old ones especially, they're real hard to watch. I don't know, because that, I don't know.
Tom and Jerry are good to go back to
as
well.
It's the same stuff over and over and over again, yeah. You
know. Tom and Jerry depends on who was the artist doing them, because there's some of them that I don't like, but some
the 70s were rough, man, for Tom and Jerry, I think. Late 70s, early 80s, excuse me. But like the 60s and early 70s, when did he come on the... Well, did he come on the air? I don't even recall.
I have no clue.
It had to have been like early to mid-60s, I would think.
Probably.
Right?
Yeah, probably.
But anyway, the early days, the animation was freaking awesome. And I think that's when they were fun, that they're funniest. The sound, like, of them yelling, like when they get hit on the toe or something, or his tail
the Tom screen.
The
door.
Oh, yep.
Those are the good ones.
Loved that. Yeah, it was so good. So good. I'm sorry, I'm hogging the microphone here. Who would like to go next?
I just want to pose a general question. And Scott, I'd love to get your take on this. Since Toy Story, it just seems like a lot of new cartoons that are being theatrically released are digital.
That's one point I had right here. I mean, and it's just like Scott was saying earlier, it changed everything.
Right.
I mean, you might have seen one or two, like, two-dimensional hand-drawn animation films. Like
Princess and the Frog was the last one I remember.
Wasn't
I think that was the last one.
When did that, like, Atlantis... what was it?
Atlantis, the Lost Empire.
Something like that. Wasn't there like a flying ship or something?
Yeah.
That was kind of like a 2D meets kind of 3D.
Some 3D elements in there, yeah.
But those are like the last few I can recall.
I guess what I was going to ask is, do you guys think we're going to see like a complete deviation from that art style?
I mean, at least not from that art style. In Disney films and like mainstream cartoons, yes. But I could be wrong.
Disney went, I think it's almost pure digital. They fired all of their cel animation people, and they're doing everything with computers filling in the middle steps. And so I think the Princess and the Frog was, I think you're right, that was the last one that was hand-drawn.
I don't think much of any shows are really hand-drawn anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know The Simpsons eventually switched over. Uh-oh. You could tell, like, night and day when The Simpsons went from hand-drawn to digital. And I think something was lost in that, because some of those hand-drawn, you know, they would accidentally give them a blank stare or something that would just set the tone for whatever was happening. It's like, look how stupid Homer looks right now, you know?
Especially looking at the old early ones, like even the Tracy Ullman Homer, or The Simpsons. Oh, my God.
Like there'd be times where, like, a different character would be talking. Your focus would be there, and you'd watch Homer's eyes just, like, not go crossed in the middle, but, like,
just
both
drift
look
off.
Different. but, no, I mean, I'm sure we'll probably see some 2D animation in some form, but, again, maybe independently done.
They're even doing stop motion digital now, and they're just recreating the objects and doing them stop motion.
Really?
Well, in the Lego movie, it's all 3D Legos.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. Mm. Is there anything they can't do?
You almost think, what's the point? But there's something about that stop motion.
Because it looks fucking awesome.
Yeah.
That's what the point is. Yeah, it really does. But yeah, you would never think of that. You know. I have seen Toy Photography.
Are we allowed to talk Endgame? Is that too soon?
Go right ahead.
No, boy, go for it, man.
We've been talking Endgame.
The digital de-aging that they did in some of those scenes was just freaking amazing. You couldn't tell.
Yeah. Like with Hank Pym.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, my Hank God. Pym. That was.
Looked I like think he just came off Romancing the Stone
just for Hank Pym.
Kurt Russell in the Guardians movies. Mm-hmm. How about that? Like those opening clips. I mean, that was young Kurt Russell. That was crazy. I
spoke out loud seeing that. Oh my God, look at him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they did that with, sorry, we're deep diving here, but with Rogue One, with Grand Toffit, the...
Tarkin.
Tarkin, yeah. Thank you, yeah.
He was totally CG, though.
Yeah. He was totally, yeah.
Dead, yeah.
And when I first saw him, I had to squint, and, you know, about 30, well, under 30 seconds, I could tell, all this dude's completely CG, but he still looked amazing.
Yeah.
It's all in the mouth, usually.
Yeah.
The way that their mouth moves.
I just think if you're going to be that bold with your CG, you shouldn't put such a spotlight on it like they did with, like, Leia at the end of that film.
Mm-hmm.
She looked good. Don't get me wrong, but... I don't know if they would have maybe took some of the light away,
didn't make it
put her under some shadow, maybe took the camera a little bit farther away, but you're like in her grill. So, you know, it's really obvious.
They still did a better job than they did with Superman's mouth, though.
Oh, my God. That wasn't even a job. That was just a fiasco. That was horrid.
I think SpongeBob's intro is better done than Superman's.
And it was so funny because, you know, I didn't see that film until it was already out of theaters. I didn't care. And when I was watching it, I hadn't been looking into it. I didn't heard anything about the CG mouth. I knew nothing about it. And I just was watching it and I started to notice and I was like, what the fuck's going on with that guy? Like,
what's on his lip?
And I started to think, well, maybe they just CG'd his mouth. But then, like, I stopped myself, like, well, that's preposterous. Why would they do that?
He had a cold sore or something, maybe. He covered up.
Well, and the movie he grew the mustache for, the Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Right.
He looked like a porn star throughout the whole thing. I don't know why they went with that look.
I don't know. That, I gotta say, that movie was fucking awesome. Mission Impossible. Yeah, it was an odd look. I will give you that because it never stopped. It never did, like, resonate with you. Like, every time he came screen, you're like, oh, yeah, mustache. Like,
keep waiting for the bow chicka wow wow.
But that was still...
Actually, regardless. I was kind of hoping, like, when they pull off the face and they reveal somebody underneath, he was just going to rip off his mustache and say, I'm old.
Oh, my
That's
God.
That's awesome.
Anything else, gentlemen?
No, we covered them. Toy Story, very well, I think.
Yeah, I think we got everything there.
Have you guys seen the teaser trailer for the new Pixar movie, Onward?
No.
I might have, but I just need a refresher.
Have you seen it yet, Scott?
I do, and I can't remember anything about it. That tells you how much I really loved it.
So from what I gathered, I just watched it before I came over tonight. It's like a road trip movie, but it's set in a world where, like, magic and has, like...
The suburban one.
Yeah, it's like medieval...
Magic in suburbia.
Exactly, yep. And they're on, like, some road trip. But the scene that, like, was cracking me up was one of they're two brothers, two ogre brothers, I think, going... Or an elf brother, maybe. Anyway, they're going on a road trip, and the one brother's walking out to throw something away, and there's, like... something in the trash can, and it cuts over, and it's a bunch of unicorns acting like regular raccoons. Like, yeah. It's just, it cracked me up.
No, I'll look it up. I haven't even heard of it. Not at all.
You know, one of the best Pixar things that I've always cracked up on is the seagulls from
Mine.
Yeah. Oh, God, all the time.
They turned the, what is it, 3,000 Leagues Under the Sea? I can't remember. What is it? What's the name of the movie? Help me. The league.
I think it's 2000.
2000 Leagues Under the Sea. There was a ride at Disney California.
Okay.
Where, and this is an old ride, where it's like it's a submarine you get in, and it's just barely, you know, it's right underwater.
Right. But
through special effects and bubbles and stuff, they make it look like you've really submerged deep under, you know, into the ocean. And the old ride had all these like cheesy, like fake rubber octopuses under there. Yeah, and okay. They made it look cheesy, but they have updated that into a Finding Nemo thing. And now, you know, you go underwater and still experience part of that cheesiness, but now it goes into a dark area where there's nothing but like screens around you. And like the animated fish are swinging up to the windows and talking to you and stuff.
That's cool.
It's neat looking. I've never done it, just seen it. But while you're waiting in line, you know, you're waiting in line on a like a harbor, like a dock.
Okay.
And there's a bunch of animatronic seagulls out there. Mine. That's just always funny. Screaming. It's funny.
Oh, it's so funny.
All right. I think that'll probably do it for our retro this week. But I think that was a well-rounded Pixar conversation, mm-hmm. Right? All right. Very good. And with that, let's swing open the door to the comic vault. Who would like to go first this week? The second to last comic vault we'll ever do.
Oh, my.
Did you think about that?
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, the segment itself's going away, Jack.
Well, yeah, but it'll be here and there, right?
No.
No, we're not going to do it at all anymore?
We're still going to talk about comics, but okay. It's just going to be one big free-flowing conversation gotcha. Instead of breaking it up into segments.
Okay.
So, would you like to go first this week since you've been out?
Yeah, I'm going to go first.
Do it.
So I've got, this was another one of those Ollie's Bargain Basement five for
you've been making deals. The fuck out, haven't you? No. Off old Ollie.
That was a Superman All-Star Special Edition. It came out, apparently, when Man of Steel came out. It's back right. then a little bit, and it was a free issue. But it starts off, you see a big old sun, and there's this spaceship flying towards it. Well, it gives kind of a back history of Superman, of course, getting away from Krypton, because I don't know if anyone knows that he's the alien that was sent to Earth.
Oh, spoilers.
Yeah, I don't know. But there's this spherical spaceship flying to the sun. There's a group of scientists on there. One of them wants to map the sun just science sake, pretty much, yeah. In there, there's one scientist that he starts talking about he's going to hit critical mass, and he starts morphing into this big grizzly looking mush monster thing, and no, next thing he's like, I'm gonna blow this thing up, and next thing you know, Superman shows up and he's like, no, you're not, I'm here. Well, come to find out later on that it's Lex Luthor is controlling this guy. The guy in the ship is some genetically enhanced human.
Of course he is.
Yeah. And Lex Luthor was gonna go to jail, but he said that he was gonna be good, like he does. And instead, he built this computer on this ship that was along with this genetically engineered scientist to blow up. I don't know if it was supposed to take out part of the sun or something like that, or ruin part of the way the sun shines on the Earth to destroy the Earth. But he knew Superman was gonna be there. Superman gets in the fight with the guy on the ship, jettisons out. Superman blows the guy towards the sun. The guy blows up. And once Superman comes back on the ship, they're checking him out, make sure he's okay. And they find out that Superman has supercharged his body so much with the sun's radiation and from that nuclear explosion from the guy that his cells are overpowered and starting to die. So Superman's actually starting to find out that he can die. So he goes back to Earth and goes back to the good old Daily Planet, almost gets fired from Perry White because he's late.
This sounds familiar.
Does it?
Very familiar. Go ahead.
On the way home, he's, you know, walking with Lois back home and bringing her home. And he's just like, hey, Lois, I gotta tell you something. And she's rattling on about, you know, the next big news report. And he's like, no, just hold on. I gotta tell you something. And rips his shirt open.
I think they made a movie of this. An animated film. Wasn't there an animated film, All-Star Superman?
Yeah, the one with the big robot.
I remember nothing about it, but as he's telling me this, like, I feel like I've seen all this familiar, before.
Actually, yeah.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Same here.
Yeah, because that was an interesting concept. Like, it was his some like version of cancer that he could get. It was like eating at his blood cells, right?
Mm, yep, that's exactly what it was. Okay, it was kind of weird at the same time, because the way that it's almost drawn, like it's back in the 20s.
Okay.
But cleaner with more detail. I don't know. And just the way Superman looks, he looks like he did. Like he's from like the old serials type.
Talking like slick golden / silver age Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Kind of like how the animated series was Superman. How everything, even with Dark Knight, but Batman, everything looked like it took place there. But even though they have like super super new technology.
Yeah, Batman especially was set hardcore in the, what was that, the 40s, 50s? I mean, with all the cars like that were running around Gotham, mm-hmm. like old mobster kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so weird that DC always stays in that time period, but Marvel will go, you know, future and it works, but you can't go backwards with Marvel because it doesn't work as well, I think.
I think it works better for Batman, you know. His high-tech gadgets nowadays, you know, the farther we go into the future mean less and less, you know. Like, this is, you know, but in those days, you know, mean a lot more. And, I mean, that's where his origins are, right?
Yeah.
So, anyway. That's it.
All-Star Superman Special Edition.
Sweet.
It was free.
Thanks, Ollie. All right. Scott, would you like to go next?
All right. I'm holding in my hand the original death of Captain Marvel.
Oh, wow. Ooh. Now, are you talking like...
95 back then. That was huge.
Like Shazam massively Captain Marvel?
That's the one where Death is holding him, right? Lady
this
Death?
This is the one where he dies.
Okay. But the cover is Lady Death holding Captain
yes.
Marvel. Okay.
Yeah. Captain Marvel's, yeah, basically dead, sitting in the lap of Lady Death, and all the Marvel heroes are running, going, ah! But not only is this a classic Jim Starlin, trippy as all heck comic, it's really about Thanos, which is weird because, you know, it's about Captain Marvel dying from cancer, which, first of all, was the most brilliant thing that had ever happened in comics. Nobody dies from simple stuff in comics.
Right.
And here he was dying from cancer. And the reason he was still alive is his negabands were keeping him alive. And if you removed them, he'd be dead. It's his own powers was keeping him alive long past when they could have cured the cancer. So by the time they realized he had cancer, it was too late. And that's pretty much every cancer diagnosis. Once, after a certain point, it's too late to do anything. And it ends in the trippiest way. After he passes on, he has a last battle with Thanos in the afterlife. And then they walk off together, Thanos, Captain Marvel, and Lady Death. And it's just, you're never going to see this. I love the movie Captain Marvel, but nothing in this book will ever happen now in the MCU.
Yeah, and how amazing it would be to see something like that, mm-hmm. you know, on the silver screen, for sure. I've heard of that book before. Now Thanos being in the After Realm, is he, like, courting Lady Death at this point, or...?
Oh, this is right after the Avengers storyline, where it literally was a sequel to the Avengers storyline, where they defeated Thanos, and at the start of the comic... Thanos has been turned to stone, and he's bringing the other Titans to go see the body and claim it and bring it back home. And it's just trippy.
Yeah,
it was rare that you had a two-part comic in those days. And the first Avengers versus Thanos two-parter was epic in its own right, and then it got its own graphic novel sequel. But that was Jim Starlin. He could never leave anything alone. He always had to add more and more.
I think I have a reprint of Avengers versus Thanos around here. You remember, and I think they still do it, actually, to this day. Marvel, especially if their title's going to be in the theater, they'll pump out classic number one reprints for mm-hmm. $1 a piece.
Yeah.
They just said True Believer across the top. I've got so many like reprints of classic comics that way. I think I got that book that way. I'll have to go look for it. I would love to read that.
It's like World's Greatest Comics is always at the new movie releases and stuff at the theater.
Yeah. We've
got a table there.
Or every move is blocked by the insurmountable obstacle, Marvel's Negabands. And when was the last time you saw Doctor Strange in all caps, big, bold words, and it didn't involve Crimson Sidorak or something?
Couldn't tell you.
Every cosmic character you can think of was in this comic.
I'm thinking of Infinity Gauntlet, like when I guess this is the only time I've seen all those cosmic entities together when they come to challenge Thanos, and then he takes on the same kind of a form before Nebula, you know, nabs the gauntlet off his hand. But are those the beings you're seeing?
They get referenced because this happens not too far after that. You see the Supreme Intelligence. You get a tour of all of Captain Marvel's life. And the best part is Rick Jones crying at the end. remember when Rick Jones was in every damn comic?
I don't recall.
He was Captain America's sidekick. He used to have the team network that Captain America would use to find out everything via their ham radio connections.
How convenient.
And
then
he was Captain Marvel for a long time by clapping his hands together and switching into the Megaverse or whatever it was.
No, you're going down an avenue I'm not even aware of. You said his name was Rick Jones?
Oh, yeah. How do you not know Rick Jones?
I keep
thinking of Rick James.
Rick Jones was gone from the comics for so long that in the original Jessica Jones storyline, the original investigation was what happened to Rick Jones. And he turned into a folk singer and was singing in dive bars with a classic guitar, singing about the Avengers and all the stuff he'd been through.
Really? That sounds freaking awesome.
That's right up your alley, Jeremy.
Yeah, it kind of is, isn't it?
What a change.
And they did bring it. No, they did bring it back in a recent epic. It was where the Cosmic Cube made Cap evil. Rick Jones was a super high tech hacker for some reason. I can't remember what changed him into it, but he was the hacker for S.H.I.E.L.D. and he was running around through the whole thing and turned out to be a double agent or some weird stuff.
Hmm. Sounds really good.
Oh, Rick Jones. You can't know Marvel without Rick Jones unless you're just an MCU fan. He's not in.
No, I the name's familiar, but I cannot think of who he is.
Yeah. I might recognize him if I saw him, but
Rick Jones was the dumb kid that wandered into the gamma testing site that Bruce Banner went to save and became the Hulk in process because he stuck him in a refrigerator and somehow that protects you from nuclear blast.
Of course. That was an old fridge.
You say
well, he was. I don't know if it was an old fridge, but he put him in something and Banner was the one exposed. And so Rick Jones.
Maybe that's how I know him. I think I have a what if where it switches that scenario. If Rick Jones had taken the gamma blast instead of Bruce Banner. Does that sound familiar?
It does sound familiar, yeah. Actually.
And he got hulked out at one point in one of the storylines. He became a Hulk for a while. I think maybe he became an abomination for a while, too.
That's crazy.
That's probably how I know him, because I definitely know the name. I'm going to have to go dig through my comics. That's it. not right now, but I'm going to.
But the weirdest Rick Jones story is there was a teen network that would be on ham radios that would feed Captain America crime stories and would investigate for him. And Rick Jones was the head of it.
It's kind of like the microchip of
The Punisher.
Captain America, yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. I'm going to look more into Rick Jones. I think I need to know more. Mm-hmm. I'm a novice if I don't, right?
Look up Rick Jones, bitch.
Rick Jones, bitch! All right. Very good. I think we have an episode title
there
already.
There you go.
Randy, what do you got for us this week?
All right, so I've got a Doctor Who comic from Titan Comics.
The 10th Doctor. The ninth Doctor.
Christopher Eccleston. I was looking for a 10th Doctor because I love David Tennant, but this is who I found. So it's just kind of standard Doctor Who fare. They're on a spaceship fighting a big devil-like monster, and then the Cybermen make their appearance and pretty much assimilate a lot of the crew. And
was it with Rose? Or
Rose is in there. Yep. I'll let you, the art style is really nice. But it's just standard Doctor Who stuff. But the thing that I like most about the Doctor Who comics is they're able to kind of expand the stories of each individual Doctor and kind of give you some more filler if you have a particular favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I was always partial to 9 and 10 myself. I warmed up to 11 and 12.
Yeah, same here. Still not sure about Capaldi, but...
Capaldi was okay when he whipped out the guitar. That sold me on him.
One of those Sonic sunglasses. That was tough with those.
I know nothing about Doctor Who.
We'll get you acclimated. You watch Doctor Who at all, Scott?
I have seen all of Doctor Who. At least all the ones that are available to see.
Who are your favorite? Do you like pre-revival, or are you more the new stuff, or...
Anybody that's watched it as long as I am is going to say, Tom Baker, yeah!
Yeah, it's Tom Baker.
But I love Kurtzweil.
Okay.
He was the original cranky Doctor.
Right.
And he would Venusian karate people, which is just freaking awesome. And I love Sylvester McCoy. He had one of the worst runs of any Doctor. The worst stories, just abysmal.
That was before. That was the doctor right before the they kind of shut
the
down.
That killed it.
Yeah, and that was the one right before the USA movie, right?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Okay.
And he played Radagast the Brown in the Tolkien movies.
That's right. Okay.
Which was horrible. Oh God. But there was something about Sylvester. They were leading up to the 13th Doctor, where he turns evil. They had just done the entire serial story where the 13th Doctor was the Valiard and he was evil. And Sylvester's entire run was this borderline between bumbly, happy, jokey Doctor, but sinister underneath.
Yeah.
And he did an episode with the Cybermen. It was like the 30th or 50th anniversary of the Cybermen. It had to be 30th.
Okay.
And he manipulated everything to destroy the Cybermen. At the last moment, he reveals all the chess moves that he was doing behind the scenes. And he's like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah. I've saw a couple episodes with him. And yeah, it's I remember he was more like the chess master than some of the other ones were.
Yeah, he was a lot more like the master than he was the doctor.
Right.
But the new ones, Tennant. Tennant's my number two.
Yeah, yeah. Tennant was a good doctor. Mm-hmm.
Have you guys listened to any of the radio dramas?
I've listened to a few of them.
I'm going to blank on the guy's name that did the American movie.
Is that Paul McGinnis?
Yeah, Paul McGinnis. It's a shame he didn't get a series because they gave him an entire season on the radio dramas.
He was damn good.
And they were excellent.
Yeah, I heard a couple of his.
It's a shame he didn't get a chance.
But he also did like a little short before... oh crap! One of the Christmas episodes, I think, too. Didn't they bring him back?
Yeah, they brought him back for a little teeny bit. I think it was
For the Day of the Doctor, right?
Yes, it was. I don't remember when it was.
I think it was the Day of the Doctor because that's when he turned into the War Doctor, who was played by
yes.
Oh crap! You got that.
Oh, the War Doctor was awesome.
Yeah, I can't remember the actor that played him though.
Well, William Hurt or something?
That's it.
Oh, the War Doctor was so good.
We'll get you up, Jeremy.
Okay. Fair enough. Very good. So Doctor Who on Titan Comics, right?
Yep.
Very good.
Artwork, and that's pretty good.
All right, I'll tell you the worst episode of Doctor Who. And it was a Tom Baker one, and there's been a lot of bad ones. There was a time when he was in it wasn't quite an alternate universe, but it was a parallel universe, and he ran into the space vampires. It's not just space vampires. These were vampires the size of a planet. They were the origin story of all the horrors of the undead vampires. They were all distant myths of these great vampires. And they originally terrorized the Gallifreyans. And the only way that they could stop them was with ram ships, which were giant pointy ships that they smashed into the heart of the vampires.
That's awesome.
Imagine the epic of a planet-sized vampire that you have to kill with a spaceship by plunging it into your chest. And that was the best storyline you could come up with.
To try that against Galactus anytime he comes around.
I know, right?
Right. Very good. Any more on Doctor Who?
No, nope. That's it. What do you got there?
What I have here is something I found in the basement of Backrats, as always. But it's something that I had missed out on during its original run, only because so many people were dogging it, was the Superior Spider-Man. And I don't know who all is familiar with the Superior Spider-Man. But
you finished that, right?
I got in on the tail end of it, right when it was wrapping up during Goblin Nation.
Yeah.
Was that Doc Ock? It was.
Spider-Man?
Okay.
Yes. Doc Ock was on his deathbed and had found a way to transfer his consciousness into Peter Parker. And the story went on for a year and a half that way, untouched. And through Spider-Verse and all that stuff, it went through. It was good after I went back. But anyway, I found this annual, number one annual. And those are just, you know, a little bit thicker, bigger story. And I wanted to read this. And after I read it, I wanted to bring it here because I've always kind of told, you know, what separated Superior Spider-Man from the Amazing Spider-Man. This book does a good job of showing why he's so so awesome. So, you know, again, like I said, Otto Octavius's mind and conscience is in Peter Parker. And okay. in doing so, he said, I'm going to do this job way better than Peter Parker ever could. And that's kind of what's happening here. The world thinks that Peter Parker, who now is like a big CEO of his own, you know, robotics, scientific research and development company. And as far as the public knows, it's Peter Parker who supplies the Spider-Man, which everyone fears now
okay.
with all his tech, his spider bots, because now he has little spider robots that canvas the city. He's everywhere, you know?
All right.
And this book picks up with him on his way to Aunt May's house. Aunt May and her new husband, I can't remember what his name is here. It's irrelevant. Anyway, he's kind of in narration saying how much he cares for them. And it's an odd thing because it's not his family. It's Peter's family. But they never allude to it, but I think the reader's supposed to kind of pick up this is Peter pushing back, you know, because Peter's still in there. Okay. Peter's still in his head, just suppressed.
Right.
And throughout the series, you can see moments like that where his Otto's thoughts are questioned or his, you know,
like he's second guessing himself.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. And you always think that's Peter trying to get back, gotcha. You know. But, you know, again, he's caring very much for them. And her new husband saying, listen, you working with Spider-Man's going to be bringing a lot of people around. We're worried about you. And, you know, I'm worried about us and her. And he's like, I promise nothing will ever happen to your wife, my aunt. And there's this entity out there, half person, half demon, who looks a lot like Michael Morbius.
I was just going to say Morbius.
Is not Morbius. I mean, look at that picture. Tell me it doesn't look like Michael Morbius.
Oh, yeah.
Morbius, yeah.
But his name is Blackout. And he's an assassin that is out to make his name known with murder again. He wants his reputation back. The Kingpin had done something to take that reputation from him. But you know what? The Kingpin's dead, I think.
He's got
to
build back his street cred.
By Spider-Man's hands at that. So, yeah. And he's on a job to find Peter Parker and threaten Peter Parker into telling Spider-Man, I want to face off with him. And so he kidnaps Peter's Aunt May right after he had told her new husband, nothing's ever going to happen to her. I got you back. And he's pissed. He's wicked pissed. And he is greeted with a burner phone. When he gets to Aunt May's house, her husband's sitting there shaking. He's like, he left this for you. He said to keep this in your pocket. He will call you and tell you what to do. And so the phone rings. And he goes, I have your aunt. Don't try to track me. She dies. If I think you're on my trail, she dies. You know, here's what's going to happen. Very specific set of rules. And I'll tell you when you can see her and find her. But from the second that phone rang, the spider bots that are canvassing the city knew right the hell where he was. Before he even said, don't think about tracing this call, he had visual of him already driving the van. It was crazy. It's something you have to see, but he doesn't really still know how to fight this person. Half demon, half person, has his aunt, threatening to kill her at the drop of a hat. And at one point, he's like, I'm going to go see Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange will help me out of this. And okay. he stops mid-swing. He's like, I can't do that. If anyone's going to see through my facade, it's Doctor Strange.
He's trying to approach it more in a cerebral fashion like Doc Ock would, as opposed to Spidey.
Right. So he's like, I'm in this on my own. And gotcha. Then he starts to question his own motives. He says, well, this is a bit selfish. There's this woman whose life hangs in the balance, and I'm thinking of my own personal welfare. And then you see the Otto kind of take the thought back over, like, but no, Peter could never do this. I've got this way better than he does. So the grand finale, he shows up at the warehouse where he's holding Aunt May, breaks in, they have a tussle, have a fight. In this warehouse they're in, it's like an old meat packing plant. So there's okay. all kinds of chains and hooks hanging from the ceiling, which are going to just be all kinds of fun here in just a little bit. Anyway, he breaks in, beats the living piss out of him, and sends Aunt May on his way. Said, ma'am, if you just walk, you know, down the street, there's a police officer waiting to escort you home. So as she's walking away, he walks back. Spider-Man walks back into the barn. This is long-winded. I'm sorry, but this is so fucking good. And it's an annual. he walks back in the barn and the demon's on his back, you know, all bloody, kind of laughing. He goes, "You can't kill me. I'm a demon." And so he's like, "Yeah, you know, but I can still have some fun." And he walks up and stomps on his legs and arms, fracturing them, breaking them all. Picks him up and throws him into these hooks until enough of them have impaled into his back. He's hanging there, just impaled. And he's like, "Do you know who you're messing with? I'm a half demon, you know, I'm half demon." And he goes, "Yeah, I know what I'm messing with. The problem is, you don't know who you're messing with." And all of a sudden, all these animatronic spiders like come up over his back and start surrounding him.
That's awesome.
And they all open their back to little petri kind of dishes and tweezers and tools. And he goes, "You know, I've never had the opportunity to study a demon, so we're going to do just that today." And he pulls out these big pliers and starts pulling his teeth out, his fangs.
Oh, man. Oh, my God.
And he's like, "Man, this one looks like it's made of the same thing fingernails are made of, but I'm going to need another sample." And it cuts back to him. All his teeth are gone, blood pouring down his face. And he's, mind you, a demon, pleading. "Please, I will never bug you or Peter again. Please set me free. I'll tell the world, don't mess with Peter Parker and Spider-Man." He goes, "You definitely will tell the world, but not in the way you think." And this other spider robot walks up and opens its back up. Now, mind you, we said at the top, he looked a lot like Michael Morbius. Mm-hmm. He has kind of the same traits. You know, he had the big vampire fangs. He can be hurt by the sun. Now, mind you, this fight's happening at night, but luckily these spiders have little lights in them, little UV lights.
Oh, jeez.
And it doesn't show exactly what happens, but even better, you see Aunt May walking down the street and looking behind her in the distance at the open door to this warehouse and just shrieks of screams coming out. And this, you know, by the end of the series, the world knew not, you don't fuck with Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. There's even a part in this where Peter Parker has his wallet picked off his person. The pickpocket goes down the street, sees it's Peter Parker's wallet, runs it back to him and profusely apologizes. "Please don't send him after me. Please don't send him after me." Anyway, I'm going to shut up about it, but I think it was a good example of how ruthless Superior Spider-Man could be with his victims.
He had a hard time adjusting to normal life after he came back.
He did, because, yeah, he had
the whole factory, he had his whole lab and everything that he was in charge of and all that.
And Otto had fallen in love with a girl at the lab, who Peter came back, was like, "Well, I don't love you."
Didn't want nothing to do with her, that's right.
But it was a good series. If you haven't checked it out, The Superior Spider-Man, strongly recommend it.
Yeah, I loved the entire run. What I loved in the very beginning of it that really set the tone was when Doc Ock punches somebody seriously for the first time as Spider-Man and realizes all his life Parker was pulling his punches. He had never punched Ock with his full strength before. And he realized that Peter was never living up to his potential because he didn't want to hurt anybody.
That's incredible.
That was just the most brilliant scene. And then Doc Ock gets so pissed that Peter never finished college that he gets his own a doctorate as Peter.
The whole series is fucking awesome. It's gorgeous. And you know way more about it, it seems, than I do. Again, I got in late on it, and I'm still filling the gaps as time goes on. But, I mean, one big thing for me that I've mentioned on this show a few times is when Peter finally does get the body back in the midst of a Green Goblin fight.
Yeah, I'll never forget when you were telling me that, story.
Goblin can see through Ock's facade a mile away, and he knows he can beat him and mess with him. And when Peter comes back, when he drops that first smart-ass line, like, "Hey, nice purse, Gobby," you see his eyes dilate like, "Oh, shit, this is the real Spider-Man," you know? I love that moment. I will never forget that. But anyway, The Superior Spider-Man Annual is what I had there. And I, again, strongly recommend checking it out.
It actually runs parallel to when they switched over, because Doc Ock went to prove that he was Peter's greatest villain. It wasn't the Goblin. It wasn't Green Goblin. It was him. He was the superior foe of Spider-Man. And he utterly beat and destroyed Peter. it was devastating to see Parker completely and utterly lose and know he's lost.
I'm so glad that I've found someone who has a good appreciation for the series. Most time I bring this up, I mean, not here, but other people.
What are you trying to say?
No, other people have been like, oh, that was crappy, or ooh, that was like, they group it with like the clone sagas and stuff. I'm like, what?
That's because they didn't read it.
Exactly.
I can almost guarantee. I was surprised at how long they went with it. And
right.
It is really weird not having Parker, the Joker in the universe, because it really is. It's a totally different comic. It was a great set of stories because the thing that worked was Dan Slott.
Oh, always, yeah.
Dan Slott is the most long-term plotter planner ever. And he pays off everything. And he remembers and brings back everything. And he'd been doing the run for, like, I don't know, 5 years by that point?
Yeah, a long time. Is he still doing it?
No. He left not too long after Superior Spider-Man.
About the time I ducked out with Dan Slott was Spider-Man, like, worldwide. I don't know if you remember that at all.
Around the Renewing Your Vows stuff came on.
It was around the same time, if not right after Renew Your Vows. I enjoyed that. That was good, the Renew Your Vows miniseries. But, yeah, like, when he started, like, zipping around in a car and was, like, all over the world, I was kind of growing a little disinterested personally. But that's how Spider-Man's always been for me. I come and go from the story.
Well, and that was actually the end of the Superior Spider-Man story, because it was basically Parker going, hey, Doc Ock built me this worldwide corporation. I get to be Iron Man now. And I'm worldwide Spider-Man. And it didn't even last 9 issues before Parker screws it all up and loses everything and everybody hates it.
Really? I should have stuck with it. I should have stuck through it.
Well, it was kind of corny and goofy.
It was.
At the time. But it pays. That's the thing about Slott. One issue, sometimes it doesn't work. But the whole thing, it always pays off. But the best Slott miniseries was Spider Island.
You know, I've got that, and I still haven't read it.
Yeah,
I do.
If you don't have it, get it in a collection and a trade. Spider Island is great. All of New York gets turned into spiders.
I was buying it as they were all coming out.
The Battle World was coming out.
You know how I do with comics. I'll go buy 10, I'll read 5, and the others get boxed. Mm-hmm. You know, so I need to read it. Very good. This has been some awesome. This was a good comic vault since we're going out.
Yeah,
you know,
really.
Like, this is one of the last. So
yeah, thanks for beefing us up, Scott.
Yeah, putting us really showing us a thing or two about some comics here.
Well, if this were video and you see my office, you'd understand.
Fair enough. Well, let's talk about a few more comics here that have your name on them. Supermom and Delta Dawn. Scott, I want to thank you again for being here with us today. And again, this has been an awesome conversation up to this point and expect it to keep going as such. But can you tell us, our listeners, a little bit about our Supermom and Delta Dawn? I don't like to take liberties on myself in describing these books to people because in the past I've gotten in trouble for giving out spoilers and stuff. So I find it better to let the artist do so.
Well, I actually have a whole Scott verse, which actually started in my first comic, which was Raymond Hardcase.
Okay, I did see that on the website.
Yeah, it was a cross between The Fugitive and the Justice League, where a Charlie Sheen-type superhero, who's just a complete jerk, never wore a mask, everybody thinks he's a scumbag, gets accused of murder, and they all go, well, of course he did it. That's the kind of stupid thing nobody expected he actually did. It was an accident. They all believed it was an accident, but they all believed he did it. And I've been using that universe ever since. And all of my comics take place in the same thing. And I have a couple novels. I have a couple game supplements. I have a RPG module. And we've got two character rosters out there. And we even made a trading card game at one point.
I noticed the business cards that you had lent us to put on the table there looked very much like trading/playing cards. Are these the same cards you speak of?
Yeah, well, I had a blast with that. At one convention, I was doing the handouts like every other comic creator, and I saw one of my postcard-sized cards laying next to a trash can when I went to the bathroom, and I was going like, oh, what a stab to the gut. And I said, you know what? I need to make these collectible. This is a comic audience. People collect things. So, and the other thing that I didn't I had a problem with was our Supermom was my main comic at the time. And we always have Mom and the kids on the cover. The artist that kept doing, the very first one, did a wraparound cover. And most of the other artists that I brought on board did a wraparound cover for the same price as a regular cover, just because it was fun. And we always would put the family in the front, but Dad would always be in the back. So Dad's Hispanic, and Mom's Caucasian, and the kids are super Caucasian. They're blonde, white skin. Mom's dark haired. They don't match. It was a not well done story, I gotta admit. But every time you see the covers, it doesn't seem like there's any nationality to my comics. And I have a plethora of characters, and I use every skin tone, every nationality. It doesn't matter. I use it. And I said, I need to show people the other characters that they're not getting to experience by just seeing the covers. So I made 9 trading cards, and I featured a different character on each one. So this way I could show people the range of characters that I had.
Okay.
And I said, and I'll make them my business cards, and they'll be collectible. And I couldn't leave well enough alone, so I made them like Pokemon cards. And I came up with stats and figured them all out and got proportion because I'm a freaking geek. So they came out looking really good, and I printed 1,000 of each, so I had 9,000 cards. And I've been passing these out for a long time. What I did, they were so popular, at one point I started taking 9 of them and putting them in card sleeve sheets, and I was selling my business cards as a complete collectible set.
Oh, wow. You were selling them?
Yep, I was selling it for $2.
Very nice. They are cool cards, they that's are. For sure. They
look like a regular collectible card.
And people loved it, and everybody started asking me, well, where's the game? Where's the game? And I said, all right. So I made a collectible card game out of it. And I made sure that the trading cards, the card game is the exact same size as my business card. So if you use card sleeves like Magic players do, you can use the business cards in the game.
That is freaking cool. And what a great idea. I mean, like you said, you know, you did this because I'm a geek, but that's your demographic, mm-hmm. you know? So, I mean, this, of course, this is going to resonate. I mean, I know the first time, you know, Randy put them in my hands, I was like, I told you, I was like, these are freaking cool. Yeah. Like, I've never seen business cards like this.
Are the business cards like special power cards that make you stronger out of the game itself?
No, they're just a regular set of the characters. They're not. When I made the trading card game, if I use the same character, I use different art.
Hmm.
Even if the card's the same. So these are variant cards, I guess.
Those variants, yeah.
But the best thing about these cards is that when I hand them to kids, they go like, oh my gosh, look what I got.
It's gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It like, looks like a Magic gold. Or Pokemon or mm-hmm. any, you know, those kind of cards for sure.
And they're so well laminated that I hand them to little kids and they're munching on them and their dads go, that kid's going to destroy it in 2 seconds. No, they're treasuring it, and it's hilarious.
It's really cool. And you know, I'm curious though. You say all these universes are, you know, or they're not all different universes. They're all in the same universe. So, have these characters crossed paths? Are they talking with know each other yet?
Yes, they all cross paths, and they all know each other.
Perfect.
Strangely, there's only been one character that's shown up in every iteration of everything, and that's Kine. She's my Irish firebrand who has fire powers and has a bit of a mouth on her, has a bit of an attitude, and she just keeps writing herself into everything that I do. And the fun part is bringing her into all – some my comics range in different ages. Every time I do a different series, I target a different age group. Our Supermom was meant to be an all-ages comic. So when you put Kine in there, you got to be really careful because it's not PG-13.
Right.
It's PG. How do you censor someone that clearly needs censoring? I made it work. And it's hilarious now because Kine is vice principal in Delta Dawn. And our Supermom is a superhero paragon, and she's the principal at the school. So I have them as principal and vice principal, and I'm just having a blast with it.
That's awesome.
It's my take on X-Men.
That's, yeah, that's what I was kind of gathering. And even better, set right here in our hometown, Columbus, Ohio. Why? What was the inspiration that just, was it just simply, is it hometown pride, or is there another reason you chose to base this in Columbus?
Well, it's a little bit of both. Hard Case takes place in New York, like every comic is supposed to. And when I started doing our Supermom, I wanted to base it more local because my artist at the time was local. It wasn't Columbus area, but he was in Columbus a lot.
Okay.
And I wanted to base it more in the real world. My comics take place on an alternate Earth. So most of the real world things that have happened in the comics. And so I use real world locations often. And since he had a lot of references from Columbus, we decided to set it in Columbus because we could put real buildings and real places in there.
Right.
But we've also put Indianapolis in the comics. We put Chicago in the comics.
Just opening the front cover to Delta Dawn, you know, you immediately, that first panel, I saw the
Short North.
The Short North Arch, which is, what, 15, 20 minutes from where we sit right now. So, yeah, it really helps ground it for you, you know?
It helps the artists because you're not creating everything whole cloth. And most artists were going to take real-world photos anyway and alter them. So I figured, let's just use real locations and get a good feel for it. We had fun destroying the Columbus Convention Center, where I was doing a show at the Columbus Convention Center. I had my comics in the comic store at the Columbus Convention Center, and then we destroyed it.
That's awesome.
It's just fun to do that kind of stuff. Why Columbus? It was more the location based on the artist. What, that was the nearest city he was to. I'm from Cleveland, originally from Cleveland. I've been in Dayton and Yellow Springs area for 15 years now.
Oh, no, but, kidding. I love Yellow Springs.
I did a Godzilla one-off little bit, a big mecha Godzilla that destroys Public Square in Cleveland. Wow, it's just a blast awesome. To put real locations.
You always see it in New York, but seeing somewhere local, it's always makes you feel kind of good.
Well, it's so refreshing when it's not New York, you know? It's like, how many times can New York take a beating? Come on.
Well, so, when I was in Chicago, my artist at the time was from North Dakota, so he'd never been to Chicago. No, I take it back. He used to visit Chicago, but he hadn't been there a long time. So I took a bunch of photos of the area. And if you've ever been in Millennium Park, they have a water park section with these two big towers that are like glass brick, and they have digital images that appear on them, and water shoots out of the mouths of little babies at one point. And when I took a shot of that, and when the artist redid it, he had just had his baby, his first child was just born, and the digital image is actually his baby.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow.
If you're going to do this stuff, you got to have fun with it.
Yeah. And it seems like you are having a lot of fun. And they're both beautiful books.
I've always tried to put out books that are as good as, or better than, most of what's out there. Now, Marvel and DC, they can afford to have some beautiful books. But they also put out some real garbage books.
Yeah.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth?
And I've tried to keep the quality high enough that I'm running toe-to-toe with them. And Delta Dawn, the art and the color in it is just beautiful.
I would have to agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. And even in the Supermom, you know, our Supermom, I'm sorry, I keep forgetting to put our on the front of that. Our Supermom. I think you're doing a good job with the black and white medium. You know, there's people that when they do black and white sometimes don't nail it, and you're not one of them. I really enjoy the way that book looks.
All art credit for that goes to the other Scott. It was hilarious. When I hired him, I had already started calling my imprint Scott Comics.
It's funny.
And so I hire an artist named Scott, and all of a sudden there's two Scotts. And so everyone figures that's why it's called Scott's Comics. No. But Scott Simmons did a wonderful job. I would give him outlines of like what is in each kid's room, because I specifically had all kinds of details that I think matter to a story that most people will gloss over. like the daughter, I wanted her to be interested in science specifically.
Okay.
She loves space. She loves NASA. And so everything in her room is not the girly stuff that you would normally put in a girl's room. The younger son, Marky's just a goofy kid and just likes whatever he likes. Simmons sketched out the floor plan of the entire house. And so you get camera angles where you're in one kid's room and you can see stuff in the other kid's room. And then they switch perspectives and it's in the right place. That's all him. I mean, I told him what things I want in the rooms, but he created all the beautiful camera angles so you get that 3D sense that you're walking around things. We even used the floor plan sketch at one point when we had the kids. Spoiler, the kids get powers too. And at one point, Marky's got super speed, and he's running home to tell Dad something. And we have him going super speed through the house, and we use the floor plans that Scott generated.
You mean so just, like, mapping out his, like, where he was going and stuff? Yeah, that's really neat.
So here's the background of the two books, since we mentioned them. Our supermom, the reason our supermom exists is after Hard Case, it was grim and gritty, classic, dark, 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 and then it gets darker storyline. And I like comedy, and I wanted to do something different. And I was thinking I was going to do something like Teen Titans, something silly and fun. And I was at a convention. It was Mid-Ohio Con, as a matter of fact. And I was looking around, and I realized half the audience had become female. I don't know when the switch. I don't know when the switch over had came. And it wasn't just girlfriends. It was female geeks going to comic conventions. It was girls and their friends hanging out in cosplay. It was the first time I was seeing a lot of babies at a show. Huh. And I'm going, like, no one's writing kids' comics anymore. And no one's writing comics for women. Everyone around me is writing hack and slash zombie stuff. In the marketing world, they call that opportunity. In the market. So I said, okay, I'm going to write a comic about a female superhero. And I'm going to give her a family. And right away, that's rare in comics. Other than the Fantastic Four, it's really hard to find families in comics, especially with the one thing. Here's how I pitched this. She's fully clothed. Nobody's dead. They're happily married. And I can still tell stories. Right there, I just broke every comic trope that there is. Because life does, and then I always follow up with life doesn't end at marriage. And then, you know, ha, 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 ha. But that's true. So when I came up with that concept, I was going, like, when I came up with a female superhero, I was going, what would be different about a female superhero that a male hero would never face? And I came up with the superhero as a job. That's my career. What happens when I have a child? What do I do with my career? And most women face that situation at some point. And the counter to that is the classic superhero. I'm Spider-Man. I'm never going to quit being Spider-Man. Oh, this is horrible. And he throws his suit in a trash can and he walks away. No more Spider-Man. Well, he goes back and picks it up. Right. You can't ever not be a hero. And I thought that was a perfect. She actually retires because her kids are more important than being a hero. And the entire series is about the conflict of her making that choice and her old lifestyle impinging on her new world. And by the end of it, by the end of the 12-issue arc, and it's one big 12-issue story in three arcs that are standalone stories, at the end of it, she decides she needs to get back in the world. She brought something different to the table that other heroes don't, and she decides to train the next generation of heroes, and that's Delta Dawn.
Oh, snap! Full circle! Very good.
So that's how it all connects. And a Delta Dawn is for mature audiences. And it was all the storylines that I couldn't use in our Supermom because, like, that's a little too hard to do. But in Supermom, I don't pull a lot of punches. Like, I have grandma calling up, half speaking in Spanish, complaining that, what are you doing with that white woman who's – she's a floozy. Get rid of her. You're like, Grandma, stop. And I put all the risque stuff in Spanish, so people were reading me like, ah. We have the racist grandma going, what are you doing? So I tackled a lot of tough stuff. I tackled homeschooling. Marky, when he develops powers, become super strong and super fast, just like mom. But imagine a toddler with super strength. Dangerous.
Right.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. That would be nuts, wouldn't it?
Hell of a temper tantrum.
Worse than
and
Jack.
The first scene I show it, he's at preschool, and, you know, they're playing with trucks, and he makes this truck go vroom, and it bashes through the school wall. And all the kids are going, cool! And they're going, wow! And you just show that, and I have the preschool teacher behind you, just utter panic. And it ties, and that's an example of how I tie them all together. In Hard Case, the main hero, Hard Case, is his ability is he's as strong and as indestructible as he wills himself to be. But it takes focus. By default, he's a little tougher than normal, so if you attacked him in his sleep, he'd still be okay. But for him to really Hulk out, he basically has to stay still because it takes all of his focus. I gave him a brother, and this is when I was destroying Chicago. His brother's at a mental institution in Chicago because when his brother got into the powers, he was the kind of kid that had control issues and destroyed his entire home and killed his parents.
Ooh.
Because of that, a law was created that if a person has powers that are considered a danger to society, special laws are allowed to be applied and civil liberties get removed.
Sounds like that What If episode we were doing, What If Superpower Beings Existed. Mm-hmm. We talked about that exact same kind of thing, didn't we?
Yeah, way before Brightburn did it. And so I bring in that law that said Marky can't go to school anymore because he's a danger to the other kids. So he has to be homeschooled now. So I tie them all together. And Delta Dawn, not only does she agree to train the next generation, what she did is she wants to have a school that mixes heroes, kids with powers, and regular kids. She thinks it's like special ed. She wants inclusion.
Right.
She doesn't want people raised separately. She wants people to know each other. So she wanted to do a STEM school. The agreement was, if she runs a Delta Force team, which is my kind of shield, if she runs a Delta Force team for the Midwest and trains the next generation of adult heroes, they will fund the STEM school. And kids are bused or flown in from all around a five-state area in the Midwest to go to the school. And by doing that, I get to have all kinds of fun because I bring in all kinds of different locations. Just this latest issue, I wanted to have a terrorist scene where they were threatening one of the superpowered kids because they're normal. It's normals versus freaks.
I see.
I'm kind of doing the X-Men, but I had some militant guys wanting to make a stand by basically going to strap a bomb to a kid.
Oh, snap. Ooh,
geez.
Who's clearly not normal because she's got dog ears and pink hair.
I can see how that might invite some prejudice.
Yeah.
So she's a freak, so they're going to strap a bomb to her and blow her up on the news.
Wow.
And I wanted to do this at a comic store because, hey, let's blow up a comic store. So I did it at my friend's comic store, Oh Yeah Comics, up in Muncie. And I went up there and did a full photo shoot. We got all the different camera angles, and Christy appears in the comic. And it's just a blast.
It sounds like you are having a really good time writing all these. I mean, you can hear the passion in your voice when you're talking about these stories. It's really awesome. I enjoy what we've seen thus far, and just any kind of universe building, I'm a part of. I just support. Yeah. I love, love that. And again, especially if that universe takes place right around where we live, right?
Right.
Come on. Now, it's funny you had mentioned the Scott's Comics web domain earlier, because when I typed that in, it then directed me to Corgi Press. Is that correct?
Yep.
So well, is that where I should direct everyone to go?
Yep, corgipress.com. I started out as Scott Comics because I wanted to promote me and try to get my name out there and, you know, maybe write for somebody that will pay me instead of me paying artists.
Sure.
Didn't work. So I said, okay, I need a corporate mascot. I need a logo. And I have a corgi. And as soon as I got a corgi, I discovered the world of corgis. I was completely unknown to me until I got the dog. And oh my God, I had no idea how much people love corgis.
Oh yeah, it's ravenous, right?
Yep, it's ravenous. So I said, okay, he's my Mickey Mouse. So I put him on everything and changed my imprint to Corgi Press.
I like the way he looks here. Does he have little 3D glasses on too? Is that what I'm seeing?
Actually, he has dichromatic eyes. One's brown, one's blue.
Oh, no kidding.
Party and eyes.
He's like that in real life.
Oh, yeah, with a domino mask on him.
Yeah. And
oh,
what I
see.
What I did for the card game is the heroes, he's wearing a mask. And for the villains, he's got a handlebar mustache and a little goatee.
Nice.
And that evil look.
Yeah, now that I'm looking at it, he clearly, is not wearing 3D glasses. Yeah. Maybe I need new glasses, it would seem.
Well, maybe I just did a bad mask. I don't know.
No. I was looking at it from across the table.
Well, and this is the perfect segue because I need to talk about my Kickstarter.
Oh, you have a Kickstarter?
I have a Kickstarter because I also do children's books.
These
don't take place in my comic universe.
Okay.
In all the times I would spend hunting for new artists at comic shows, I would run into people that, I don't want to do a comic with you. I want to do something else. Your style is great. And so I've been doing children's books, illustrated books. I just love it because artists love to have that ability to just stretch and
right. be creative. Get their hands into something different.
And the one that I'm currently doing, and the Kickstarter is going on right now. You can get on it right now, and please get on it because I really want to make this book. It's Anthony Fox Does Not Believe in Ghosts. And if you just put Anthony Fox into Kickstarter, it'll pop right up. The entire story is about a fox who's too wise and too smart to believe in ghosts, and the ghosts are trying to convince him they are real, and he tries to convince the ghosts they aren't.
I did see this on your website, actually. Yes, I was. I really enjoyed the way that looked, too.
And Angela Fuller did the art for this, and she's known for doing really cute but spooky things. There's this the fine line between adorable and gothic. And as soon as I saw her art, we had both been in an anthology together. She had the last story, I had the third story. And I had commented to her, because we were all put in the same Facebook group, that I thought her story finished off the anthology perfectly. And she go, oh, thank you. And we hit it off from there, because she loved my story. That was her favorite one in the book. Don't tell anybody else that. That's a secret. But she liked my story. That story was a blast. I got to go on a side tangent on that one. I did a Sesame Street monster that was laid off and is now a drunk in a bar.
Is it Big Bird by chance? Is it Big Bird?
No, it was a Cookie Monster. It was a Cookie Monster type thing called Letter Monster. And the, and the title was B is for Boobs.
It sure is.
No, it was B is for Beer. Sing the song with all the things that he loves that are named Beer. So anyway, Anthony Vox. It's a gorgeous book. It's spooky. It's all ages. Kids third grade and up should be able to read it themselves.
It looks good. It looks like it'd be a good addition in any library. I've got a little thumbnail up for it right here. And
I love how that artwork is on it.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's really good. It has a classic look to it almost. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Very good.
How long's the Kickstarter running for?
He's got 10 more days.
I think there's 10 more days. Yeah, it's getting close to the end.
So in this episode, we'll be going up here in just a few days on the, what is today? It'll be going up on the 6th, so that'll leave,
five more days?
Five, six more days there to jump on board, and we'll also be putting that on our Facebook and social media. So, we'll push as many people over that way as possible, because, again, that is freaking gorgeous.
Yeah.
And, see, I'm kind of dumb in that, as a writer, I could just write novels where I don't need to work with anybody. Aside from, you need a lot of editors when you're writing novels. I love making comics. I love making illustrated books. That's the stuff I grew up on. That's the stuff I love. But, oh my gosh, is it expensive?
Yeah, God. Yeah, we hear it time and time again. Not a cheap thing to get in on.
Especially the print
and
part.
And I pay my artists, too. They love me.
Yeah, we've heard a lot of the stories of people getting stood up by other artists, right?
Yeah.
We've heard it all here, I think.
I've found out, long after the fact I've been paying my rate for our supermom, I found out that I was paying more than the third-tier companies were paying.
Wow.
That's now pay my what I pay my colorist is better than what most of the comic companies pay their colorists. I don't feel that bad about my rates. I used to feel like, oh, I used to feel really bad because I knew the artists deserved more than they were getting.
Right.
And so I will always promote them. I always give them copies of the books. I bring them to shows and put them in for free signings, and I let them sit at my table and collect sketches and do stuff for other people, and I don't take any of that cut. I do everything I can to promote them.
Yeah, well, we're going to be helping you do just that, promote this. Yeah, so, yeah, again, on our website, on our Twitter, Facebook, all the happy places that be, we're going to be pushing this out there for the people to see. And just the best of luck to you on your Kickstarter. And I mean, you've got some solid comics here. And, man, continue building that awesome universe.
Thank you much.
Jack, what do we have on the website?
Go to candairpodcast.com where you can check out show highlights, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, buy some merch, become a patron, see some of our YouTube videos. And if you'd like to promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
There it is. And don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. And again, if you're a fan and want to become a patron, head over to patreon.com/CannedAirPod. And for $5 a month, you can get yourself access to the Canned Air Patreon Pod. What else we got?
Society 6.
Go to the website. There's a merch button. You can just click right there. Take you right there. It's easier than trying to type in all that bullshit we always tell you to type in, right? And also, in your podcast player of choice, if you search Canned Air Productions, you not only will see this show, but you'll see our other show come up, What If, where we offer a simple, like the old Marvel comics, we offer a simple twist on reality. What if people could fly? What if, upcoming one is, what if the wheel had never been invented? We just did, what if Genie's lamp had been discovered? We talked for about 45 minutes on the said twist on reality, and it's a lot of fun. So check that out, whatifpod.com, or again, search Canned Air Productions in your podcast player of choice. And my God, people, how many times have we got to tell you, if you're going to a Wizard World Con, Canned Air at checkout in the promo box gets you that 10% off your ticket prices. You can't beat it. You really can't. So don't forget your boys when you're buying your tickets. Anything else, gentlemen?
Like Pixar.
Well said, Jack. And with that, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Randy Hardenbrook.
And Scott Bachman.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Scarlet!
That's like your sixth try. You obviously don't have any talent. Have you thought of giving up?
Maybe I should just try again.
Maybe you should try listening to Canned Air Podcast.
Well, at least now I know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Oh, I thought I heard you say something, Scott. Did you not?
No, but I could.
Go right
ahead. Go for it, man.
Oh, my God. It's late.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.